like open doors. Leading you down into my core. Will I become so numb? The thrill I saw. My spirit sleeping somewhere cold. Until you find it there and lead it back home.
Wake me up.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Thursday, January 18th, 2018 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And a wild ride it is. Wild and dystopic, to be sure. Yesterday's Senate Commerce Committee hearing titled Terrorism and Social Media, hashtag, is Big Tech doing enough? Question mark, which is weird. Featured testimony from Facebook's head of global policy management, Monica Bickert, YouTube's global head of public policy and government relations, Juniper Downs, and Twitter's head of public policy and philanthropy, Carlos Monge. And as high profile as this hearing was, supposedly, there was a near media blackout in terms of coverage, which is weird. Especially with, you know, all three of these big social media companies involved. And so that was odd. The Guardian reported on it, though, across the pond, which is interesting. The title of the article, Social Media Firms Warned of New Type of Online Extremism at Senate Hearing. But it wasn't the social media firms, actually, that the Guardian piece was concerned with, which is even stranger. So it wasn't just those three figures that I mentioned. It was also Clint Watts, the former FBI counterterrorism guy who is now a fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, FPRI. He was the guy sounding the big alarm. And in his testimony, he described this new type of threat as Anwar al-Awlaki meets Pizzagate, which is pretty weird. The propaganda that radicalized Anwar al-Awlaki is real, and it was, well, we'll talk about where that propaganda comes from. It's not what we're led to believe. It's there's more than meets the eye there. Same thing with Pizzagate. Those who don't know that Pizzagate is something that has been used to legitimize high-profile human trafficking, basically, should watch Ben Swan's five-minute reality check on Pizzagate. You can still find it floating around on YouTube, even though YouTube tries vigorously to scrub it at every turn, every time it's reposted. So, but I've mentioned several times, you know, San Antonio Express News, Fox 29, other outlets have, you know, the stories of, like this headline, Fox 29. You know, we hear, oh yeah, somebody, you know, John Podesta, Tony Podesta, they're talking about cheese pizza in their emails. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that these terms are known child trafficking terms, according to the FBI, which is why, for example, Fox 29 ran the story after cheese pizza post, New Jersey officer arrested for child porn. Authorities said New Jersey corrections officer has been charged with receiving images of child sex abuse. Federal prosecutors said Thursday that 37-year-old Stephen Salamack was arrested at his home in Lodi. Salamack has been suspended with pay from his corrections job in East Jersey State Prison. Prosecutors say an undercover officer first made contact with Salamack after he posted on Craigslist that he was looking for women and moms that are into cheese pizza, a reference to child pornography, according to the FBI. So it's a real thing, but the Pizzagate psyop was used to essentially normalize it, to acclimate and anesthetize the public to this kind of high-profile deviance. If we were really concerned about this problem, then the documentary Conspiracy of Silence, the 1993 documentary Conspiracy of Silence, would air on a regular basis, probably on all networks, every year at least. And we would be prosecuting pedophiles and criminals at the highest levels of government and so forth. You know, folks that engage in trafficking among countries, you know, like Haiti and so forth. But I digress. Won't get into that right now. So Clint Watts, who I am not fond of and always reminds me of the aphorism, once an agent, always an agent, described this new type of threat as Anwar al-Awlaki meets Pizzagate, referring to the U.S.-born jihadist cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, according to the Guardian article, credited with using social media to inspire terror attacks around the world. And the viral online conspiracy theory that led an armed man from North Carolina to discharge his weapon in a Washington pizza restaurant. See, it all just sounds so sanitized and whitewashed. Actually, Anwar al-Awlaki was U.S. born. He was an American, and the federal government killed him and his two children. And remember, three times his enemy action. Anwar al-Awlaki was an American-born man that never had the benefit of due process of law and never did anything to anyone. sure he, I'm not condoning the propaganda and his tactics, but he didn't hurt anybody. He didn't kill anybody. He didn't do anything like that. Yet the American government killed him and two of his kids. The Obama administration killed him. September, 30th, 2011, and his son, who had nothing to do with anything, the federal government even basically admitted it was a mistake, or so they say, 2 weeks after, and then the Trump administration killed his daughter, and that has sparked violence and unrest. Anyway, moving along, so Clint Watts is kind of the focus of the Guardian article and much of the testimony that was given yesterday, which is interesting. So it wasn't really social media. He was kind of the mole in the room to tell us what is the – so he says, you know, he's a fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, FPRI. And he testified, the greatest concern moving forward – might likely be a foreign intelligence service posing as Americans on social media. Doing what? Infiltrating one or both political extremes in the U.S. and then recruiting unwitting Americans to undertake violence against a target of the foreign powers choosing, said Watts in his testimony to the Senate's Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. So we're supposed to believe that foreign governments are going to hijack Facebook to recruit unwitting Americans to undertake violence against a target of the foreign powers choosing. Meanwhile, which is absurd, by the way, meanwhile, the United States government, which has been instrumental in the creation of social media and continues to be because of its efforts in OSINT, open source intelligence, the broader 16 or 17 agency coordinated effort to have you spy on yourself and your neighbors. The U.S., the United States government and intelligence agencies in particular are very interested in this subject and are conducting these kinds of campaigns. As of the reworking of the Smith-Mundt Act, the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act authorizes, sanctions this kind of behavior on the part of the United States government, and it not only condones it, it appropriates funds for it, which is fun, so that we end up with things like Operation Earnest Voice, the United States government and agencies creating sock puppets on social media to propagandize people. So the United States government does this and very well, and does it in such a way as to avoid detection so that you don't know they're doing it. So it's interesting that Clint Watts says, instead of recruiting Americans to their own ideologies, foreign actors will instead focus on sowing division based on existing political issues within the United States and manipulating individuals to the point where they take violent action. It's interesting. Foreign actors. See, there's so much spin in this. It's unbelievable. But to me, it's really easy to – what I see, and I think I see through the whole thing. What I see is, first of all, it's very provocative that Clint Watts thinks he can tell the future. How does he know that instead of recruiting Americans to their own ideologies, foreign actors will instead focus on sowing division based on existing political issues within the United States and manipulating individuals to the point where they take violent action? How does he know that? What purpose does it serve these foreign actors? But wait, the foreign actors, in my humble opinion, are probably garden variety sock puppets that are part of Operation Earnest Voice, because you will recall Earnest Voice is only supposed to be conducted through foreign media outlets, and the federal government says that it can't prevent this stuff coming back through these foreign media outlets to America through social media channels. Aha. So it seems to me that this would be another example of our own so-called government being weaponized against us. It's really weird. Looking at the headline of the Guardian article, social media firms warned of new type of online extremism at Senate hearing. Actually, not really. They didn't so much as Clint Watts, the once an agent, always an agent, former so-called FBI counterterrorism guy, now a fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, FPRI. So that's interesting. For context on this event, I want to give you, in the final moments here, the opening remarks from South Dakota Senator John Thune. So I just want to give you this, and then we'll kind of talk about this more in the upcoming segments. Can we play that clip? Again, for context on yesterday's terrorism and social media, is big tech doing enough hearings? The Senate Commerce Committee hearings, Senator John Thune's opening remarks.
I want to thank everyone for being here to examine what social media companies are doing to combat terrorism, including terrorist propaganda and terrorist recruitment efforts online. The positive contributions of social media platforms are well documented. YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, among others, help to connect people around the world, give voice to those oppressed by totalitarian regimes, and provide a forum for discussions of every political, social, scientific, and cultural stripe. These services have thrived online because of the freedom made possible by the uniquely American guarantee of free speech and by a light-touch regulatory policy. But, as is so often the case, enemies of our way of life have sought to take advantage of our freedoms to advance hateful causes. Violent Islamic terrorist groups like ISIS have been particularly aggressive in seeking to radicalize and recruit over the Internet and various social media platforms. The companies that our witnesses represent have a very difficult task, preserving the environment of openness upon which their platforms have thrived while seeking to responsibly manage and thwart the actions of those who would use their services for evil. We are here today to explore how they are doing that, what works, and what could be improved. Instances of Islamic terrorists using social media platforms to organize, instigate, and inspire are well documented. For example, the killer responsible for the Orlando nightclub shooting, in which 49 innocent people were murdered and 53 were injured, was reportedly inspired by digital material that was readily available on social media. And this issue is not new. Over the course of several years, YouTube hosted hundreds of videos by senior Al-Qaeda recruiter Anwar al-Awlaki. Although the company promised in 2010 to remove all videos that advocated violence, al-Awlaki's call to jihad video, in which he advocates for Western Muslims to carry out attacks at home, remained on the site for years. In fact, a New York Times report suggested that al-Awlaki videos influenced the Fort Hood terrorist, the Boston Marathon bombers, and the terrorist attacks in San Bernardino and Orlando. This issue is also international in scope. In response to recent terror attacks in London, British Prime Minister Theresa May has been especially outspoken in calling on social media platforms to do more to combat the kind of radicalization that occurs online. Last fall, for example, she was joined by other European leaders in calling upon social media companies to remove terrorist content from their sites within 1 to 2 hours after it appears. As we'll hear today, the companies before us are increasingly using technology to speed up their efforts to identify and neutralize the spread of terrorist content. In a recent blog post, Facebook said that artificial intelligence now removes 99% of ISIS and Al-Qaeda-related terror content even before it can be flagged by a member of the community, and sometimes even before it can be seen by any users. YouTube is also teaming up with Jigsaw, the in-house think tank of Google's parent company Alphabet, to test a new method of counter-radicalization referred to as the redirect method, seeking to redirect or refocus potential terrorists at an earlier stage in the radicalization process. YouTube offers users searching for specific terrorist information additional videos made specifically to deter them from being radicalized. A little over a year ago, Facebook, YouTube, Microsoft, and Twitter committed to sharing a database of unique hashes and digital fingerprints of some of the most extreme terrorist-produced content used for influence or recruitment. By cross-sharing this information, terrorist content on each of the host platforms will be more readily identified, hopefully resulting in faster and more efficient deletion of this material. Essentially, these companies are claiming that they can tag individual videos and photos, and using automation can kick them off their platforms before they are even seen. We all have a vested interest in their success, and I believe this committee has a significant role to play in overseeing the effectiveness of their efforts. I do want to thank Ms. Bickert, Ms. Downs, and Mr. Monhay for being here as representatives of their companies. To Mr. Watts, I look forward to hearing your thoughts about disrupting and defeating terrorism. And with that, I will now recognize the ranking member, Senator Nelson, for any opening statement he'd like to make. Senator Nelson.
For disrupting, who better than a former so-called FBI, basically COINTELPRO guy? You know, who better than a COINTELPRO guy to disrupt things? And what is happening here? What's really happening is the censorship of the American people. I mean, when it comes down to rubber meeting road, we're hearing that there's still a bunch of radical, you know, terrorist propaganda floating around on social networks, which is hogwash. Most of that comes from very specific places. We'll talk about that more. But it's a setup in simple terms. So in the latest round of falling forward cybernetic totalist social engineering, how apropos social media executives were testifying on Capitol Hill along with Clint Watts about fighting extremist propaganda on social networks. The biggest problem is in who defines what as extremist propaganda. And spoiler alert, social media overlords and their masters would probably categorize this broadcast as extremist propaganda, but I digress. In all seriousness, allow me to propose some real questions, rhetorically though they may be, or rhetorical in nature though they may be, focusing primarily on Senator Toone's opening remarks with some supporting documentation. Since question number one, since when is it the responsibility of social media companies or any company to combat terrorism, including terrorist propaganda and terrorist recruitment efforts online, quote unquote? Question number two, if we really are concerned with combating terrorism, including terrorist propaganda and terrorist recruitment efforts online, then why are we allowing Wahhabi Salafi teachings in, of all places, our Ivy League schools like Yale and Harvard and Stanford and charter schools throughout America? You may recall back in on May 13th, 2012, CBS aired Leslie Stahl's 60 Minutes piece titled "The Gulen Movement," documenting this decade-long travesty. And since then, folks like Sibelle Edmonds and others have been speaking out against this nonsense. Here's a clip from the 60 Minutes piece. Can we play that, please?
Past decade, scores of charter schools have popped up all over the U.S., all sharing some common features. Most of them are high-achieving academically. They stress math and science. And one more thing, they're founded and largely run by immigrants from Turkey, who are carrying out the teachings of a Turkish Islamic cleric, Fethullah Gulen. He's the spiritual leader of a growing and increasingly influential force in the Muslim world known as the Gulen Movement, with millions upon millions of disciples who compare him to Gandhi and Martin Luther King. Gulen promotes tolerance, interfaith dialogue, and above all, he promotes education. And yet he's a mystery man. He's never seen or heard in public. And the more power he gains, the more questions are raised about his motives and the schools.
The story will continue in a moment.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
This is the Harmony School in Houston, part of a rapidly expanding chain of 36 charter schools in Texas. They serve mostly underprivileged students, and they all emphasize math and science.
Inside, there's an elastic collision between the gas particles.
What this is it's a static electricity generator.
Classwork stresses hands-on experiments and competitiveness. Students made this hovercraft out of leaf blowers for a science contest.
That's great!
Being a charter chain means they're public schools, costing taxpayers nearly $150 million a year.
So you don't even have a driver's license yet.
But I have a robotics license.
Julie Norton is an administrator with the Harmony chain of schools.
So we have about 20,000 students.
Is there a waiting list?
Yes, we have a waiting list. We have approximately 30,000 students on our waiting list. We have more students on the waiting list than we actually have enrolled in the school.
The education here gets high marks as students get state-of-the-art technology and extensive one-on-one tutoring.
Do you get excited to come to school?
Yeah. I wake up like, woo!
The enthusiasm is hard to miss, as is the fact that many of the teachers are Turkish, some just recently arrived, and hard to understand.
When did you get here, to the United States?
Yeah, I got a DV lottery, and because of the DV lottery, I came here.
There are a total of about 130 charter schools like Harmony in 26 states. Together, they form the largest collection of charter schools in the country. Here's what's curious. They're founded and run by immigrant businessmen and academics from Turkey. Why are they building public schools here? Well, the answer seems to lie with this mystery man, the Turkish Imam Fethullah Gulen, who tells his followers that to be devout Muslims, they shouldn't build mosques, they should build schools. And not to teach religion, but science. In sermons on the web, he actually says, studying physics, mathematics, and chemistry is worshiping God. So Gulen's followers have gone out and built over 1,000 schools around the globe, from Turkey to Togo, from Taiwan to Texas.
His message is that if you want to solve any social problem for the longer term, the solution has to go through education.
Businessman Alp Aslandawan chairs a foundation in Houston that advances Gulen's teachings.
It's so counterintuitive that people from
Fethullah Gulen and the Gulen Network of Charter Schools think STEM schools are great, worshiping God even. Where is Congress? Where is the general public outrage on this? But wait, there's more. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
The weekend of June 24th, more than 40,000 ham radio operators across North America will head for the hills during their annual Field Day event. Field Day is ham radio's open house, where hams showcase the science, skill, and service ham radio brings to our communities. Ham radio is making, creating, communicating, and fun. Ham radio is for everyone, including you. Come visit a Field Day site near you. Learn more at arrl.org/fieldday.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The weekend of June 24th, more than 40,000 ham radio operators across North America will head for the hills during their annual Field Day event. Field Day is ham radio's open house, where hams showcase the science, skill, and service ham radio brings to our communities. Ham radio is making, creating, communicating, and fun. Ham radio is for everyone, including you. Come visit a Field Day site near you. Learn more at arrl.org/fieldday.
Welcome back. Bottom of the first hour, this Thursday, January 18th, 2018. Feel free to dive into the chat area. I should be throwing some of these links in there. I haven't yet, but you know, over at roadwarriorradio.chatango.com. But backing up to that May 13th, 2012 CBS 60 Minutes piece, Leslie Stahl's piece, titled The Gulen Movement. We played a clip. Fethullah Gulen and the Gulen Network of Charter Schools think STEM schools, science, technology, engineering, and math, are great. In fact, Fethullah Gulen says it's worshiping God even. Did you know that? CBS ran that piece more than 5 years ago now. So where is Congress and where is the general outrage on this? In addition, as I've mentioned a few times recently, Frontline PBS has aired several segments detailing how radical Islamic terror groups like ISIS use Saudi propaganda and textbooks for recruitment and training, respectively. Published on October 11, 2016 already, Here's one installment titled Inside the Awkward U.S.-Saudi Alliance Against ISIS, Confronting ISIS. This is a Frontline PBS clip. Go ahead if you're ready with that, please.
The U.S.-Saudi Alliance is an awkward one. For over 70 years, the U.S. has depended on Saudi Arabia for oil. But this is also the birthplace of the ultra-conservative Wahhabi branch of Islam, from which ISIS springs. It is an extremely strict interpretation of Islam. Moderate Muslims accuse Wahhabis of sanctioning violence against Christians, Jews, as well as all non-Wahhabi Muslims. In a rare interview with a Western reporter, I asked Saudi Arabia's highest religious authority, the Grand Mufti, to comment on Saudi Wahhabist teachings and Islamic extremism.
What do you say to those Americans who think that it is Saudi society and Saudi conservative Salafist beliefs that have led many to take up weapons?
The Mufti, who is blind, insisted there is no connection between Wahhabis of Saudi Arabia and terrorism. Next, I went to speak to former intelligence chief Prince Turki Al-Faisal. He admits that ISIS has roots here, but says it is an aberration.
ISIS is a cancerous growth. Cancer cells, where do they come from? They come from healthy cells in the body. But the rest of the body is healthy, and so, yes, ISIS does some of the actions that can be pointed to as being similar to what we do, but we have a judicial system.
Sharia law.
Sharia law. And we're not going to give that up for anything.
The trouble is that the kind of justice often practiced here in Saudi Arabia can appear indistinguishable from Sharia justice as practiced by ISIS. Saudi Arabia is on the left, ISIS on the right.
ISIS is sort of the Uber Wahhabi, if you will. They're taking the most pared down and boiled down essence of the Wahhabi sect and taking it and owning it.
I've been to Saudi Arabia. I've talked to Saudi officials. They say that they don't subscribe to this kind of extremism that ISIS represents, and they refuse to take any responsibility for, in some way, laying the groundwork or
if
laying
you are
the
looking
seeds.
For a smoking gun, it is going to be very hard to find the memo that tells you that ISIS is following their ideology. But if you look at the essence of what that sect of Islam is all about, it is very hard not to see that if not for this, there would not be that.
In fact, ISIS used Saudi textbooks for their schools, texts that preach hatred for all non-Wahhabi Muslims.
أما المرحلة الأولى فهي المرحلة الابتدائية ويدرس فيها الطالب خمسة صفوف وبعد أن
They did not have time initially to come up with their own curricula. So conveniently, the Saudi government puts up PDFs of its textbooks online. And so ISIS just downloaded those textbooks and used them in ISIS schools.
The Saudis have revised some textbooks and say they are working on their messaging.
We're working on the counter-narrative almost every day. We're having meetings, we're having consultations with people, with experts. We have a show called Al-Akhbariya, and on that show, people give their opinion. And one of the questions asked is that question, how can you protect your children from the ideas of ISIS or the ideas of terrorism?
Another Saudi TV show, Selfie, mocks ISIS through comedy by spoofing a mass execution.
What's the good about Abdullah?
Here, an ISIS fighter tries to get his father, who has come to take him home, to participate in the killing. The question I had was whether Saudi attempts at counter-messaging were making a difference. ISIS has drawn more young men from Saudi Arabia than any other Gulf state.
نهنئكم ونهنئ أمة الإسلام عامة بهذه الانتصارات العظيمة التي تحققها دولة الإسلام في العراق وفي الشام.
Has Secretary Kerry made any progress? Has the United States made any progress in pressuring the Saudis to
change? We've made progress in terms of publicly talking about the issue, which is a step forward. But we're just skimming on the top.
The message that gets through is still a troublesome message. It still tends to denigrate non-Muslims, Jews, and Christians. It still denigrates non-Wahhabi Muslims, especially Shia. Anyone who teaches or believes that Islam is something other than the Wahhabi version.
The problem is so deep that addressing all of the layers of intolerance in Saudi discourse is very hard. The problem is Saudi Arabia needs to do more, and American pressure to get Saudi Arabia to do more is important.
It has been frustrating for the U.S., but counter-messaging is simply not the Saudis' number one priority. Instead, it is the kingdom's long struggle against their arch-rival, Iran. Since the founding of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini declared Iran to be the legitimate leader of the Muslim world. He called for an end to the Saudi monarchy. In recent years, as the U.S. began pursuing a nuclear deal with Iran, ISIS was seen as a lesser threat.
The challenge, of course, we've had in the Middle East is they all are concerned about ISIL. There is no question about that. But they don't always rank their concerns in the same order that we do. So in the Saudi case, for example, obviously I think they're focused first and foremost on the Iranian challenge.
There is not real buy-in to the anti-ISIL policy on the Saudi part. Their analysis, I believe, is that the Iranian threat is an immediate and existential one that has to be dealt with at once or all will be lost. ISIL, on the other hand, is a big problem, but it can be dealt with over time. It's much less threatening and much less urgent.
So there you have it. That was shocking. You probably missed a lot of that, so I'm going to recap some of it. Here are a few relevant excerpts corresponding timestamps in case you want to go back and listen. Or I think it should be shared widely. It's been viewed 35,000 times or so on YouTube now since October 11, 2016. I think it should be essential viewing for every American. It should have been viewed at least 350,000 or 350 million times or more by now. And again, this video from Frontline PBS is titled Inside the Awkward U.S.-Saudi Alliance Against ISIS, part of a series confronting ISIS. And so some relevant excerpts. At the 321 mark, we hear, in fact, ISIS used Saudi textbooks for their schools, texts that preach hatred for all non-Wahhabi Muslims. And as you hear later on, it's not just non-Wahhabi Muslims. This is why the issue gets so convoluted. Wahhabi adherents do not call themselves Wahhabis. They actually think it's a pejorative. They call themselves Muslims, which would be the same as a white supremacist saying, well, no, I'm a Christian, in general terms. It's disingenuous and sometimes makes identification difficult. 3:36, we hear they did not have time initially, ISIS, that is, to come up with their own curricula. So conveniently, the Saudi government puts up PDFs of its textbooks online, and so ISIS just downloaded those textbooks and used them in ISIS schools. 3:55 mark, and this is something that the Saudis are not bashful about. I've mentioned several times, if you go to the Wikipedia entry for Salafi movement under the section titled Views on Extremism, you'll see these words. Salafism is sponsored globally by Saudi Arabia, and this ideology is used to justify the violent acts of jihadi Salafi groups that include Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, and the Al-Shabaab. In addition, Saudi Arabia prints textbooks for schools and universities to teach Salafism, as well as recruit international students from Egypt, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Africa, and the Balkans to help spread Salafism in their local communities. Have we heard about those countries lately? You know, Egypt, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Africa, and the Balkans. Are we hearing about some of these? The derogatory term that's floated around that the president allegedly said, but there is no proof conclusively that he said it. So we're hearing about some of these countries, but where is the ideology coming from? Where is the wellspring of the ideology? Continuing to 3:55 mark, we hear the Saudis have revised some textbook and they say they're working on their messaging. Yeah, working on their messaging to better infect the minds of people. My grandma, how big your teeth are. The 4:30 mark, we hear another Saudi TV show, Selfie, which is weird, mocks ISIS through comedy by spoofing a mass execution. That's just a weird soundbite. The 5:19 mark, ISIS has drawn more young men from Saudi Arabia than any other Gulf state. Where is Congress? Where is the general outrage in America? 5:51, the messaging that gets through is still a troublesome message. It still tends to denigrate non-Muslims, Jews, and Christians. It still denigrates non-Wahhabi Muslims, especially Shia. Anyone who teaches or believes that Islam is something other than the Wahhabi version is denigrated. It's that simple. That's 5:51. And this is the messaging that Saudi Arabia is pushing out. Again, ISIS et al. Are borrowing Saudi textbooks and propaganda for teaching, training, and recruitment. The 6:40 mark, we hear counter-messaging is simply not... Well, before that, we hear... just before that, we hear... it's a difficult problem. Saudi Arabia needs to do more, and American pressure to get Saudi Arabia to do more is important. Where is that pressure? $110 billion arms deals are not pressure. And at the 6:40 mark, we hear... Counter-messaging is simply not the Saudis' number one priority. Well, what is? Instead, it is the kingdom's long struggle against their arch-rival, Iran. Aha! The enemy, Saudi Arabia, of Greater Israel, the Yanan Plan, and the Wolfowitz Doctrine, the policy coup, as Wes Clark put it back in 2007, the enemy, Saudi Arabia, of this project... enemy Iran is my friend, if that makes sense. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So that's why Saudi Arabia is an uncomfortable ally. It's the, you know, it's an uncomfortable ally in the overthrow of Iran, which has been part of the ongoing effort of the Greater Israel Yanan Plan, Wolfowitz Doctrine nonsense for decades. And there's it's bigger than that, but that's been happening for decades. Remember, 10 years ago, Wes Clark said 7 countries in 5 years winding up with Iran. Do we see it happening? Anyway, for more on that, I mean, did you catch that? That should be circulated widely. That's a shocking 8-minute video from Frontline PBS. And for more on that, watch Frontline PBS YouTube playlists, Frontline Saudi Arabia, including 5 videos, and Frontline ISIS, including 30 videos. And on social media, they have the hashtag Confronting ISIS. But again, where's Congress and where's the general outrage? The real truth of the matter is the CIA and the FBI et al. Rely on these enclaves for their ongoing Operation Gladio, Gladio B efforts. The fact is, if that weren't the case, then we'd be more interested in the purveyors of this agitprop than the content itself. In other words, we would not be allies with Saudi Arabia. And we would apply the kind of pressure that would put this nonsense to rest. Instead, if we're going to make glass parking lots, Saudi Arabia would be first in line. And so-called Israel would be a close second. And I realize it's probably an uncomfortable statement for some people. But again, as I've said many times, I mean, the facts are, if you go to United Nations Human Rights Council Wikipedia entry and just look at Israel and Saudi Arabia, you will see they are the worst offenders for human rights abuse on the planet, period. Period. The United Nations Human Rights Council, which I'm not a fan of, by the way, we don't need to be saved from ourselves, but even the awful UNHRC says this under the section titled Israel. As of 2015, Israel has been condemned in 62 resolutions by the Council since its creation in 2006. The Council has resolved more resolutions condemning Israel than the rest of the world combined. Hello? This is an ally? The worst human rights abuser the world over, acknowledged by the UN Human Rights Council. I mean, these numbers are obviously disingenuous. If they were legitimate, the United States would probably be the worst offender the world over combined. But I digress. So Israel is recognized as the worst offender. This gets back to the political Zionism versus political Islam equals World War III discussion that arises out of Pike's allegedly apocryphal letter to Mazzini. So continuing, by April 2007, the Council had passed 11 resolutions condemning Israel, the only country which it had specifically condemned. This has become, you know, the Council voted on June 30, 2006 to make a review of alleged human rights abuses by Israel a permanent feature of every Council session. This is disingenuous. Really, it's designed to foment this contrived conflict and further fuel it. But the point is no less valid. Then, skipping down to Saudi Arabia, we read this. In September 2015, Faisal bin Hassad Trad, Saudi Arabia's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, has been elected chair of the United Nations Human Rights Council panel that appoints independent experts. UN Watch Executive Director Hillel Nour said, "It is scandalous that the UN chose a country that has beheaded more people this year," that was back then, "than ISIS, a country that has beheaded more people than ISIS to be head of a key human rights panel. Petrodollars and politics have trumped human rights." Saudi Arabia also shut down criticism during the UN meeting. In January 2016, Saudi Arabia executed prominent Shia cleric, again, the Shia antagonism and hostility, Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr, who had called for free elections in Saudi Arabia. Again, he didn't do anything. He just said some things that the Saudi government found objectionable. Didn't kill anybody, didn't do anything crazy, just said, "Hey, maybe we should have free elections." Off with his head. That literally happened. And so is this a problem? I mean, this is where ISIS gets this nonsense. You heard in the Frontline PBS clip that we played. These people are, they are the, when you want to talk Sharia law, they are the adherents. They are the proponents. This radical, puritanical, fundamentalist strain of Sunni Islam known as Wahhabism or Salafism, which is, as some call it, Wahhabism on tour. This is where this comes from. So all of that leads to my next question. Why aren't we concerned with the source, the ultimate purveyors of this agitprop? Could it be because the inconvenient truth is that our so-called allies, the Saudis in this case, are the wellspring of this poisonous ideology, and furthermore, it is a useful tool in balkanizing the West? Isn't that exactly what Clint Watts testified yesterday? What a weird Senate hearing that was. Social media executives and Clint Watts testify. Why Clint Watts? Once an agent, always an agent. So is this a, could it be that the reason we're not interested in the source is because we need that and it's a useful tool in balkanizing the West just as it was used to balkanize, divide, and conquer the Ottoman Empire? Question number four. The positive contributions of social media platforms are well documented. So says Senator John Toon in his opening remarks yesterday. Really? Whither, Senator? I'm not aware of any positive contributions, let alone documentation. On the contrary, I am well versed with the ill effects of social media and these platforms. Greece being destabilized by tweets, allegedly. Facebook conducting unauthorized research on users like guinea pigs. Facebook being used to subvert due electoral process. You know, Michael Kaczynski's work in particular. Including Tristan Harris's remarks that Facebook is a living, breathing crime scene for what happened in the 2016 election. That's an interesting soundbite. And only they have full access to what happened. That's what Tristan Harris says. YouTube censoring politically undesirable content while propagandizing users. We'll get to more on that here shortly. The Axios interview with Sean Parker titled "Sean Parker Unloads on Facebook, quote, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains." That's what Sean Parker said, the first president of Facebook and, you know, Napster, etc. Chamath Palihapitiya's remark that we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. I'm familiar with all these well-documented adverse contributions, but not the ostensibly positive. Please tell me, Senator Toon, what are they and where are they so well-documented? Stick around. Second hour coming up right after the short break. We'll be right back.
Hi folks, CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.